emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
I expect it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
If you're looking for the accountability of a personal trainer, the energy and camaraderie of a group, and a budget-conscious price tag, then our team training at Adamson's Peak Performance is for you. We've got your fitness needs covered with five types of time-efficient, 30-minute team training workouts. Mix and combine these challenging strength and conditioning sessions to enhance sports performance, build muscle, burn fat, and sculpt the body you've been dreaming of. AdamsonsPeakPerformance.com or call us at 221-8006.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their life. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now. A lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvy with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
You may have seen the sign. You may have even driven by it today. Hi, I'm Rick Gendra, owner of Gendra 76 on the corner of Cypress and Bocelli. We've been a family-owned automotive care and repair business since 1979. And yes, we still pump your gas and clean your glass. Stop by anytime. Let us show you what old-fashioned service is all about. And try our app to save up to 25 cents per gallon of quality 76 gas.
Are Women of Vision.
Hi, I'm Haley Clandenning.
And I'm Maurice Brown.
Join us for the Women of Vision show Tuesday nights from 6 to 7.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women, locally and globally. We connect female professionals and entrepreneurs and encourage women to collaborate and achieve their personal and professional goals.
With a spirit of integrity and excellence, we will motivate you to thrive, activating your unique ability. Join us Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR 96.5 FM.
The peak will happen on April 15th. They say that's peak resource use. And they are suggesting that on that day, there will be 263,000 beds needed in the United States. There will be a bed shortage across the United States of some 88,000 beds. They're suggesting there will be some 39,727 ICU beds needed on that day, as opposed to about 20,000 available. And therefore, there will be a shortage of nearly 20,000 beds. And they say there will be 31,782 ventilators needed. Now, those numbers, you know, when it sounds, you know, like a very odd number, that's a sort of exactitude that no model can actually predict, right? It could be off by 100. It could be off by 200. It could be off by a ton. And in fact, if you look at their charts, what you see is these huge ranges of possibilities, right? There's a low wave possibility. There's a high range possibility. Right now, they are suggesting that the number of deaths per day, like if we look at the stats, their stats have basically been, I would say, close to reality so far, although not exactly on. They're constantly readjusting their models. So they had suggested that yesterday, which was April 2nd, that there would be 1,036 deaths. We saw that there were 968 deaths, right? So they're off, but how much they're off? They're off by, what, 10% there? Something like that? Around somewhere between 7 and 10%. They're projecting that today there will be about 1,200 deaths. The following day, 1,400 deaths, all the way up to about 2,600 deaths on April 16th, which would be the peak, right? April 15th, April 16th, that would be the peak, and then it would start to decline. They're predicting that by June, basically June 1st, you'll see about 200 deaths per day, and that will go all the way down to approximately 20 at the end of June. So the end of June is when they're really predicting that this thing is going to stop. They believe that even by May 1st, we are still going to be having northwards of 1,500 deaths per day. But there are serious questions as to exactly how well these models are going to predict things, because they're really using New York as sort of the basis for everything. They're suggesting that the New York model, that's going to be the model for a lot of the big cities around the country. And we've actually not seen those sorts of numbers coming out of Los Angeles. Now, the model does adjust for differences in area. So if you look at California, for example, the IMHE model suggests a lot less death in California than in New York, right? They think that because California acted early and because it's been spreading here slower and because we're not all on top of each other the way people are on New York, that, for example, by April 26th, they think the peak resource use in California is going to be a little delayed. By April 26th, there will be 12,421 beds needed, but there will be beds available and there will be no bed shortage. They suggest that in California, there will be 1,866 ICU beds needed and zero bed shortage, and that there will be a total of 1,493 ventilators needed, right? That's a big difference from New York City. So where exactly we stand at this point is not super clear. I would say the models so far have been predictive. I mean, they have. I mean, I'm not going to say they're wildly off, but there's so much play in the joints and so much that we don't even know about the virus yet. I mean, we're still finding out whether the virus is airborne or whether it actually requires droplets in order to spread. So because of all of that uncertainty, this does raise the question of how are we going to know if what we did was successful or not in strict statistical terms? How are we going to know if what we did was successful? Because there are countervailing concerns. Now, normally in a medical setting, it is easy to tell what was successful and what was not, right? If somebody dies, you were unsuccessful. If somebody lives, then you were successful. But in terms of what if the countervailing policy requires the destruction of 20 million jobs, which is now what economists are suggesting, that we're going to see 20 million lost jobs by April 12th, which is about the time when the United States is going to peak here. How many deaths forestalled, and not even prevented, forestalled, right? Because we don't know what happens in the second wave. Again, this model only goes till August. How many deaths forestalled is worth losing 20 million jobs? Because there will be attendant poverty and death and depression and mental health issues and all sorts of problems on the other end. That's not to suggest what we're doing right now is wrong. It's to suggest that we have yet to hear any of the public health experts actually weigh in on how many deaths are likely to be prevented by the policy over the course of a year, right? We kind of know how many deaths might be prevented over the course of the next 3-4 months if we do this right. Because if we don't do it right, then you end up with 500,000 deaths as opposed to 100,000 deaths. Or you end up with 1 million deaths as opposed to 100,000 deaths. But I've yet to hear any of the public health officials suggest that they have any idea what's going to come in September. And the answer is they don't really know what's going to come in September. They don't know whether this thing is going to die off in the summer. There's just too much we don't know at this point. So one of the questions becomes, when you have this level of uncertainty, what is the best policy? In case of uncertainty, do you lock everything down indefinitely? And when does indefinitely come to an end? Because if you lock everything down indefinitely, then the costs are being made manifest every single day. But the benefits are unprovable. And when I say unprovable, what I mean is that there is no way to verify how many lives are actually being saved because you can't see the countervailing statistic, right? I mean, it doesn't exist. It exists in a counterfactual. Right. If we all went out and we did moderate social distancing, for example, all the young people went back to everybody over the age of 60 stayed home. Everybody under the age of 60 was wearing a mask and social distancing. We don't actually know what that looks like because it's not happening. We know what's happening now and we know what that looks like, but we don't know what would happen if we did the other thing. Right. This is one of the problems with trying to project this stuff into the future. And so with all these variables, what would be nice is if somebody from the public health profession would suggest we have a general idea of how many deaths are going to be saved or prevented over the course of the next year, including with the second wave, including with people going back out and engaging in moderate social distancing over the course of the next year, because you know for sure that the levels of death are going to lower if you lock everybody in their house for the next 3 months. For the next 3 months, they will lower, but you just don't know what's going to happen after that. The reason I bring all of this up is because there are serious questions that have to be asked right now, and especially for the next couple of weeks. I think everybody's on board for the next 2 weeks, probably, with the massive sort of lockdown that's taking place across the country. But as time progresses, as we are seeing from Europe, things get worse. Permanent changes happen. People lose their jobs permanently. And holes are already appearing in the government's response, financially speaking. So we're going to have to take a lot more seriously how we get out of this thing. What does this look like? And I need to hear from the public health experts what that looks like. It's not just enough for them to say, we're saving lives in the here and now. I know, that's normally your job. I don't blame you that that's normally your job. But I need to hear what exactly this looks like on the other end if the economy tanks. I need to hear a mixture of policy prescriptions from people who are on the economic side and people who are on the public health side. I'm fully with you on prioritizing public health, but I've not even heard a metric of success yet. Like, what if the countervailing stat is that 200,000 people would die if we did the moderate social distancing, but 120,000 people would die over the course of the next year if we didn't do, if we locked everybody up? Then the question becomes, okay, 80,000 lives lost in order to save 20 million jobs and, you know, maybe on the other end, another 20,000, 30,000 suicides, maybe people falling into depression, right? These sort of stats, I'm not saying I know the stats. I don't know the stats. That's the point. I'm saying that if we're supposed to hear from the experts, then it would be nice to hear from the experts. Instead, we're sort of getting a black box here in terms of all of the countervailing concerns. I'm not the only one asking this question. The Washington Post is asking this question today, and we're going to get to that in just 1 second. First, we're all going crazy being stuck inside. That means that you are checking out weirder and weirder stuff on the internet. That's nobody's business except for you. That's why you need ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN doesn't log your data, unlike really cheap or free VPNs that make money by selling your data to ad companies. ExpressVPN developed a technology. It's called Trusted Server. It makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your information. I've tried a lot of VPNs in the past. Many slow your connection down, make your device sluggish. I've been using ExpressVPN. My internet speeds remain blazing fast. The last thing that really sets ExpressVPN apart, super easy to use. Unlike other VPNs, you don't have to input or program anything. You just fire up the app, click one button, and connect. It's so easy, even your grandparents could use it. I'm not the only person who loves ExpressVPN. The folks at TechRadar, The Verge, CNET, a lot of other tech experts rate ExpressVPN the number one VPN on planet Earth. So protect yourself with the VPN I use and trust. Use my link, expressvpn.com/Ben today. Get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Ben. Again, expressvpn.com/Ben to learn more. Check them out. The VPN I trust, you should trust them too. expressvpn.com/Ben. Coming up, the experts tell us there's lots of variability in the model. So what the hell are we supposed to take away from them in the long term? This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-785-9132. That's 800-785-9132. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-785-9132.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Man, I love my kids so much. I once sat for 3 hours in the cold rain to watch her soccer team lose by 18 goals.
I love my kids so much, I once used a tube to suck snot out of her stuffed nose at 3 a.m.
You win.
Love your kids? Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat. From toddlers to tweens, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat to find the right seat for their age and size. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, you need a new start. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Call 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's RANK to 79645.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So there's a lot of play in the joints in these models, and everybody knows it. The problem with the modeling is that modeling is inherently uncertain. And you heard this from Dr. Fauci. You heard this from Dr. Birx. But if modeling is all that we have to base our response on, then the question is going to be, at what point do the models suggest that we can go back to work? At what point do the models suggest that the amounts of death that are going to be prevented over the course of the next year, not the next 3 months, over the course of the next year, are worthy of shutting down the entire world economy and shutting down the American economy to the tune of tens of millions of lost jobs and millions of lives wrecked? Okay, let's be frank about this. When people lose a job, the assumption is they're going to get another job. That may very well be true. But it also may very well be true that if you are a small business owner who piled all your savings into starting a restaurant and that restaurant just went away forever, okay, that is a life that has been wrecked. If you are a person who had some savings and now you've lost your job and the stock market has been hit and you're forced to liquidate your stock in order to pay your bills, and the government response ain't coming for months, that is a life that has been wrecked. And to pretend that quality of life doesn't matter, that the only thing that matters are these sorts of projections, is wrong. Again, for the fourth time, I'm not calling for people to stop social distancing. I'm the one who's been pushing hardest for social distancing. I've been calling for social distancing since early March, just like everybody else when it became apparent that this crisis was actually a crisis. But I have not yet heard from experts sufficient to tell me what the metrics of success look like. If you were running a business, you wouldn't accept this sort of compromise. If you were running a business, you wouldn't accept people coming in and saying, we can forestall you hundreds of millions of dollars worth of savings. And you say, how? And they say, we don't know. Right? We know that we'll save you some money in the short term, but we have no idea what that looks like 6 months from now. Also, we need you to shut down your business for the next 3 months. It's going to be very difficult for anyone to explain, based on this modeling that has been provided so far, what anything looks like. And you're hearing this from the people who are in the epidemiology fields, right? They're all speculating. You hear from some people this will be over by June 1st. You hear from some people this will be over by May 1st. And maybe this is me railing against the sky because nobody actually has the data. Maybe this is we just have to take our best guess and wing it. And again, I'm willing to do that for a set period of time. I'm not willing to do that indefinitely. And I don't think anyone is willing to do that indefinitely. I do not think that anyone is willing to lock themselves in their house until June 1st based on models that do not even tell us what happens after August 1st. Again, the IMHE model can be completely right, and it still tells us nothing about what happened September 1, which I find that hard to believe, but it is true. Right? Where are the second wave models? Maybe, again, we don't have information about what happens after that. What happens when there is no herd immunity and there is no vaccine? There's just not enough information out there, which is why every day that people are looking for a vaccine becomes more and more vital, because bottom line is, without any sort of mitigating effects, without any sort of drugs that can mitigate the effects of this, without a buildup in ICU capacity or ventilator capacity, what exactly are we gaining here? Right? This is the point that I've been making all along. All we are doing is buying time for you not to get the virus. We are not buying time for you to never get the virus. We are buying time for you to not get the virus. So the question is, what happens on the other side when you do get the virus? Because the chances are very strong that in the fall, everybody is going to get the virus, because we're going to be out and about and doing the things that we like to do. And even with the masks, the chances are pretty strong that I just can't imagine the American people walking around in October, 7 months from now, wearing masks in public. I just don't think that the United States is not built for that. It's not the same thing as other cultures. That may be for good and it may be for bad. And I'm not the only person asking this question. The Washington Post has a piece today that says experts and Trump's advisors doubt White House's 240,000 coronavirus deaths estimate. According to William Wan, Josh Dowsey, Ashley Parker, and Joel Achenbach, leading disease forecasters whose research the White House used to conclude 100,000 to 240,000 people will die nationwide from the coronavirus were mystified when they saw the administration's projection this week. The experts said they don't challenge the numbers' validity, but they have no idea how the White House arrived at them. I'm confused. How do you not challenge the validity, but you have no idea how they arrived at them? That's basically them saying we don't know what the hell anybody's talking about. White House officials have refused to explain how they generated the figure. They have not provided the underlying data so others can assess its reliability or provided long-term strategies to lower the death count. Some of President Trump's advisors have expressed doubts about the estimate, according to three White House officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity. There have been fierce debates inside the White House about its accuracy. At a task force meeting this week, Anthony Fauci told others there are too many variables at play in the pandemic to make the models reliable. He said, I've looked at all the models. I've spent a lot of time on the models. They don't tell you anything. You can't really rely upon models. Then what the hell are we talking about? I mean, seriously, you may as well just say, we have no idea how many people are going to die. We think it's a lot. Shut down the entire economy. And the reason they're not doing this, is because they want you to rely on the quote unquote experts. Now, I'm fine with relying on people who know more about epidemiology than I do. I'm not challenging the inputs on the models. I'm not even challenging the models themselves. I'm saying the people who make the models are challenging the models. I'm saying the people who are creating the models understand that there's play in the joints. If you can't really rely upon the models, then again, just a question. How are you creating a metric of success? What's the metric of success? And the metric of success cannot be, you know, Governor Andrew Cuomo going out there and saying things like, the metric of success is, have we saved one life? Okay, that's just ridiculous. That's not a public policy proposal. Lots of things would save one life. You know, banning cars would save one life. No one's talking about doing that. Keeping everybody home will certainly save some lives. The question is, for how long? Who the people are who are going to get it? Does it buy us time to increase capacity? Is that time going to be useful? Right. None of these questions have really been asked. Robert Redfield, the director for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the VP's office, have all similarly voiced doubts about the projection's accuracy. Jeffrey Shaman, a Columbia University epidemiologist whose models were cited by the White House, said his own work on the pandemic doesn't go far enough into the future to make predictions akin to the White House fatality forecast. So the models are only for the next few months. He says, we don't have a sense of what's going on in the here and now. We don't know what people will do in the future. We don't know if the virus is seasonal. The estimate apparently was a rushed affair, according to Mark Lipsitch, a leading epidemiologist and director for the Harvard University Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics. He said they contacted us on Tuesday. They asked for answers and feedback by Thursday. So they gave us 24 hours, and so we gave them a number. Other experts noted the White House didn't even explain the time period the death estimate supposedly captures. Is that just a few months or the year plus it will take to deploy a vaccine? Everything was presented on basically a single slide. Among epidemiologists, the estimates raised more questions than it answered, not just about methodology and accuracy, but also about purpose. The primary goal of such models usually is to allow authorities to game out scenarios, foresee challenges, create coherent long-term strategy. Shaman said, I wish there were more of a concerted national plan. I wish it had started a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago. Natalie Dean, by the way, worth noting, back as of mid-February, Dr. Fauci was out there publicly saying that he didn't think that the risk of mass infection in the United States was high. Natalie Dean, a biostatistician who is not involved in the White House effort but is working on coronavirus vaccine evaluation with the WHO, says the whole reason you create models is to help you make decisions, but you have to actually act on those projections and answers. Otherwise, the models are useless. Yes, but we are acting, and we still don't know what the hell's in the models. I mean, like, we have no idea what exactly these models look like. Deborah Burke said the projection was based on 5 or 6 modelers, including from Imperial College in Britain, Harvard, Columbia, Northeastern universities. But 2 models appear to have been particularly influential. One was the Imperial College model that we've talked about before, which now suggests south of 20,000 deaths in the UK, thanks to strict social distancing. And even that, it's unclear from that model. Do they mean like social distancing and staying at home for a year? Because then it's not 20,000, then it's higher than 20,000. In the United States, the one that we've been using is that IMHE model that I was talking about. Apparently, Burke said that her task force initially reviewed the work of 12 models, then we went back to the drawing board for a week or two and worked from the ground up utilizing actual reporting of cases. It's the way we built HIV models, TB models, malaria models. When we finished, the other group that was working in parallel, which we didn't know about, the IMHE model, gave its own estimate. They initially estimated deaths throughout the summer would total 38,000 to 162,000, which is a lower projection than many others and actually beneath the White House's own estimates. But because of the lower figures, experts believe it was a main source for the White House's best case scenario of 100,000 to 240,000 deaths. Meanwhile, the White House was appearing to rely on Imperial College for its worst case scenario, which estimated as many as 2.2 million U.S. deaths if no action were taken, 1.1 million deaths if moderate mitigation strategies were adopted, and an unspecified number if drastic measures were taken. Well, unspecified number would be the big question right now. Like, that is the big question, is it not? Again, we don't know the time period. We do not. The IMHE models assumes that every single state is going to impose stay-at-home orders. Some states, including Alabama and Missouri, have not done that yet. It also assumes the entire country will maintain the restrictions until summer. Trump has extended the White House's restrictions until April 30th. Bottom line is, nobody knows a damn thing. Coming up, we're going to examine these statistics country by country. Do we look more like Italy or Spain, or do we look more like sort of France? This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has the chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only 4 AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Auto Limited.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Welcome to the Year of the Bear, Black Bear Diner's year-long 25th anniversary celebration. Black Bear Diner first started serving up bear-sized portions of family favorites in 1995, and they are marketing this milestone with a year of tasty specials, fun celebrations, and a continued commitment to give back to the community. Stay tuned and be sure to stop by the Black Bear Diner on Hilltop Drive in Cypress and Reading all year long, and help us celebrate 25 years of
Black Bear Diner.
For over 45 years, Clyde's Home Entertainment is the place people turn to for locally owned expert advice on electronics that turn your home into a theater. Clyde's goes the extra mile for their customers. They have a huge selection of audio and video accessories and equipment. Whether it's the latest 4K television or a hard-to-find accessory, Clyde's is the place for all your home electronic needs. Clyde's is a full-service dealer for Samsung, Klipsch, Yamaha, LG, and more. They offer full-service Dish Network. Be sure to ask about the current monthly specials. The original, and still the best, Clyde's Enterprises, 1250 Hartnell and Reading. They have it all. 221-4144. That's 221-4144. Clyde's.
If we are not Italy or Spain, if we contain this better than Italy and Spain, and if Italy and Spain don't experience a second wave, and it's too early to determine whether they will experience a second wave when they let people out of lockdown, then we are not going to end up with anywhere near those kinds of deaths, right? If we end up in the neighborhood of a France, which right now has 83 and maybe ends up at 100 or 120 deaths per million population, then you're looking at one third of that, right? So all of this depends on what we do now, which is why we should lock down for now. But again, we need to know where this is going in the future, because the costs that are being incurred in real time are grave, they are serious, and people who are taking them lightly and suggesting that you can't even ask questions like this because otherwise you're undermining the credibility of the program. Like, I don't know what world they are living in. People are losing their livelihoods. People are being forced to go to food banks. We're going to have an unemployment rate that is higher than the Great Depression here. I mean, the Great Depression, lest we forget, was the shaping event for an entire generation of Americans. My grandparents were shaped by the Great Depression. They lived the rest of their lives in the shadow of the Great Depression. This is what happens when major events occur. This is the biggest event any of us have ever seen in our lifetime, and it is not particularly close. I was there for 9/11. This dwarfs 9/11 in terms of the size and impact on the American population. Right, 9/11 was an attack on America. And then we took measures to protect ourselves. And those measures, at the time, were considered extraordinarily restrictive. Right, we had FISA warrants, and we had data gathering, and we had some new surveillance electronically, and we had the TSA patting us down. And I remember all the controversy over these things. Oh, my God, the TSA is patting us down. Now imagine a world where the government had said, you're going to stay in your house for the next 3 months. Okay, that's what we have right now. So to pretend that we can't take into account the costs of this program, it's ridiculous. We ought to be taking into account the cost of the program. I'm not pretending I know the answers, but the problem is I'm not sure anybody else knows the answers either. And I want to hear some honest accounting from the people in power, in the Trump administration, in the epidemiological models. I want to hear what they have to say. I keep hitting the same point here. We don't have enough data. And some people are saying that's an excuse for us never to take any action but to stay at home. What I'm saying is when the costs are being racked up in real time, you better damn well come up with the data fast, or people are just going to start ignoring you. Seriously. Like, either the estimates roll in and they happen to be particularly accurate and there are new estimates made as to what happens after we all go back to work, or people are just going to go back to work. because that is the way that human beings operate. Right, right now, according to Reuters, the economic crisis spawned by the coronavirus pandemic has produced a wave of grim U.S. data, with likely more to come as millions lose jobs, businesses shutter, and spending stops. At some point, the bottom will be reached. Given how fast the situation has developed, judging when that happens in real time will prove challenging for economists who usually depend on monthly, quarterly, or yearly trends and data to judge the state of the business cycle. The coronavirus outbreak is not a business cycle event. Perhaps it's a once-in-a-century health crisis, where normal choices about where to go and what to spend are influenced by a combination of fear and government edict. But it's unclear exactly how bad this is going to get. Apparently, the estimates are now suggesting that we are going to end up with, like, 20 million lost jobs by April 12th. Okay, in a second, we are going to get to the White House recommendations, where we go from here. And again, it seems like everybody is focused on, like, what we do today, and that's fine. We should focus on what we do today. I've been giving advice to people on what to do today. I've been very stringently recommending that everybody follow the law, and not only follow the law, but take extra measures. Right? I've been recommending masks since probably a week ago, right? A week and a half ago. But they had, honest to God, they had better start setting some actual estimates as to how many people are going to die a year out before we have the vaccine developed. If we stay in, if we do not stay in, we need to start making some serious data-driven choices here, not simply things are bad, stay home. That's not going to be enough. Not when you're looking at, in Europe, they're looking to break apart of the EU. Like, you may not like the EU, that's fine. But that is a pretty massive change. They're talking about the entire European Union splitting right now. Why? Because every country is now shutting its borders. They're talking about total government control of economies in Europe. There's massive rioting in southern Italy right now because supply chains have been broken and because the government has locked everything down. This is not sustainable. It is not sustainable. Everyone knows it's not sustainable, by the way. Ask Fauci, ask Burst. Everyone knows this is unsustainable. The only question is how long we can sustain it. And the other question is how long we should sustain it. And nobody has yet said how long we should sustain it. If you ask public health experts, when do we get to go back to work? And I've asked, met you, if you listen to my radio show, I've asked like two a day for the last 3 weeks, basically. When do we all get to go back to work? Some people will say May 1st. What does that look like? Well, we don't know. We'll tranche it out. Right, well, when do we all get to go back to work? Are there going to be ball games in September? Are there going to be ball games in August? What happens with the second wave? We have no idea. Okay, operating on the basis of incomplete data with real-time costs, that is a thing we are doing right now, and let's not pretend they're not real-time costs or that it's bad to recommend the real-time costs. Okay, in just a second, we're going to get to what the White House is recommending at this time, and we're going to talk about a couple of just botched media hits. I mean, really botched media hits on the Trump administration. We'll get to all of that in a second. By the way, one of the reasons that I'm sounding the alarm with regard to the economy is because despite all the talk of the government response being just wonderful and tremendous, there's a report out today that some people could wait 20 weeks to receive checks. 20 weeks until August. We've been told the model doesn't even extend past August. So if you don't have a check coming until August, how the hell do you expect people are going to survive? You think people are just going to sit home and not go to a job that they have been furloughed from? That they are not going to go back and reopen their business when there's no check in the mail? Is that what you would expect here? The small business lending program is chaos. Nobody knows exactly what the standards are. Banks are not lending same day. They're not. I'm talking to small business owners. They were told by the administration and by Congress that this thing was going to be open and ready to go. It is not open. It is not ready to go. Okay, as government proves itself incompetent on virtually every level except punishing you when you go outside, there's going to be a lot of blowback from this. Again, we can stay good for people for paying attention to the orders right now. Do I think that this is going to maintain till May with no money in the mail and the food banks running out of food and nobody having the money to give enough charity to sustain the food banks as the government forcibly shuts down an entire economy? I do not think that is the case. Something is going to have to change. Okay, we're going to get to more of this in just 1 second. But first, a word from our sponsors.
It's hook set season at Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's. Time to prep, do the research, hit the water, find the perfect spot, and set the hook. Gear up for fishing at Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's with top brands like Johnny Morris Rod and Reels, XPS, and Nitro, along with in-store events and seminars. Your adventure starts here. Shop in-store or online.
Now, when I say that this is unsustainable, one of the reasons it's unsustainable is because the experts have to actually be experts in order for the experts to have legitimacy for us to take their expertise seriously. Is that fair? That if the experts don't know all that much, it's very difficult to take all the experts super seriously. And I understand information is variable and it arrives in real time. I'm not saying don't pay attention to the experts. I'm saying we need better information from the experts. 5 seconds ago, they were telling us that masks don't work. Now Dr. Oz is on TV telling us that we ought to wear masks over our face. Not just like N95 masks, which are unavailable generally. Not just surgical masks, which at least prevent you from breathing out. He's telling you should wear bandanas. Okay, 5 seconds ago, they were telling us that it is a waste of time for you to actually wear like a full-on N95 face mask to the grocery store. And now they're telling us, by the way, slap a bandana over your face and maybe that'll protect you. Do you feel
Do you feel in control?
Like, really? Here's Dr. Oz explaining that we should wear bandanas.
Well, a scarf's not going to be as good as a surgical mask, and that won't be as good as a N95 mask. But there's a rethinking around masks, in part because we realize that the virus doesn't go deep in your lungs. It probably inserts itself right at the very tip of your nose. And imagine little doors there, which are where the cells can receptors can accept the virus. The virus is a key, and it unlocks those doors and goes in. Older people have more of those doors than younger people. That's why they get more of the infection, we believe. And wearing any kind of facial covering could block the larger droplets from getting into your nose. So net,
5 seconds
it's better
ago,
than nothing,
telling
but
bad.
Not a ton better than nothing.
Okay, it's better than nothing, but not a ton better than nothing. Great. I feel much safer now. Meanwhile, Dr. Fauci is on TV. He's saying all the states should have stay-at-home orders. Again, that's fine. As I say, like, I'm all on board with the let's get this thing locked down. But could you give us, like, an expectation of when we are not going to be locked down? You know, an expectation that's realistic, where we're not all locked in our houses till August waiting on checks that are not going to arrive from debt that we cannot actually sell? How about that? And, like, how about something realistic here? That'd be good. Here's Fauci saying all states should have stay-at-home orders. It's his next quote that really is sort of disturbing. Here's Fauci.
Some states are still not issuing stay-at-home orders. I mean, whether there should be a federally mandated directive for that or not, that I guess that's more of a political question. But just scientifically, doesn't everybody have to be on the same page with this stuff?
Yeah, I think so, Anderson. I don't understand why that's not happening. As you said, you know, the tension between federally mandated versus states' rights to do what they want is something I don't want to get into. But if you look at what's going on in this country, I just don't understand why we're not doing that.
Okay, totally agree. Again, I agree with him that we should lock everything down right now. I mean, you can't look at the images coming out of New York and the stories coming out of New York and not freak out. And we should be freaked out. But the but here is not a but that suggests don't pay any attention to what the experts are saying on what you do right now. How about, like, in the future? Here's Dr. Fauci. Again, he's an epidemiologist, right? His job is to stop disease. I understand. That's his job. His job is not to heal the economy. But here is Fauci being asked about the job losses, and here is his answer.
I mean, I know it's difficult, but we're having a lot of suffering, a lot of death. This is inconvenient from an economic and a personal standpoint, but we just have to do it. That is our major weapon against this virus right now. Yeah. We don't have a vaccine that's deployable. This is the only thing we have.
It's inconvenient? Okay, it's a little more than inconvenient if you lose your business and you lose your job. Like, can we at least not dismiss the concerns of people who are losing their entire livelihoods and are going to food banks for the first time in their lives and we hope will be the only time in their lives? Can we at least not dismiss that? And can we hear somebody, why will no one in the media ask, I swear to God, no one in the media will ask simple questions of the epidemiologist, like what happens in a second wave? Have you even gamed for this? How many deaths are going to be prevented in the second wave? Are we ramping up our ICU and ventilator capacity such that when there is a second wave in the fall, which literally everybody expects because we're seeing it in Asia, when that happens, do you expect that there will be a number of deaths prevented? How many deaths will actually be prevented? Not over the course of the next 3 months, which you've modeled, and I get, and I agree with. Over the course of the next year, because that's what we're talking about until a vaccine is developed, right? That is the actual stop point. Once a vaccine is developed, that's as good as it's going to get. There is no better than it gets at that point. They're saying that's 12 to 18 months. So the question is, what happens between August of this year and August of next year, right? Because they're talking 12 to 18 months. Let's take the longer end of that. Let's say it takes 18 months to fully develop, test, and distribute a vaccine. So you're talking about from March, which is when this started, to September of next year. So don't give me models only that stop at August. I want to know what happens after that. And I want to know how many lives are saved by all of us staying home and wrecking the economy over the course of 18 months, not over the course of 3 months. I get over the course of 3 months. I'm with you over the course of 3 months. Okay, again, the information that's coming out, even from people I trust and like, is so vague and conflicting. Coming up, Dr. Birx points out that lots of people are asymptomatic. Well, won't they still be asymptomatic when we go back to work in like 3 months? This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast One Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So what we don't know is just as important as what we do know. And that means that the variability in the models and the variability in what we know, it raises some serious questions about how do we tell if we've actually defeated this thing, or how do we tell if we actually succeeded in our measures to reduce this thing? So Dr. Birx, she says lots of people are asymptomatic, and so we have to follow the guidelines. Okay, and they're going to be asymptomatic when we all go back to work also, right? Like, they're not going to stop being asymptomatic. What's the plan, guys? What's the plan?
We all believe that there's a greater proportion of people who are asymptomatic than recognized. And again, that may correspond with age, with greater number of asymptomatic cases in people under 40. And so both severity of disease increases with age, but asymptomatic potential may also decrease with age, so that it's more in the younger age groups.
Okay, all of that's true, and it's going to remain true when we all go back to work, presumably. I'll tell you what's unsustainable is some of these recommendations. So the New Jersey governor, Murphy, he came out yesterday. He suggests that you're supposed to socially distance inside your own house. Like, I'm sorry, that's not only is that not sustainable, that's not anything anyone is going to do now. Okay, it's not going to happen now. I have three children. What the hell am I supposed to do with them? Am I supposed to take my month-old baby, shove her in the other room, be like, sorry, kid, I'm social distancing right now? You can't, what are you even talking about? This is not realistic advice. You can't socially distance from people who are in your own house. No. The answer is no. There's going to come a point where human beings just say no. And I'm willing to put that point off as far as possible if you show me what the models say about how many deaths we are preventing 1 year from now, not 3 months from now, not 4 months from now, not 6 months from now, a year from now. I'm willing to do it now while you develop those models. Just tell me you're developing the frickin' models. Just tell me that you're going to know sometime in the future how many lives we're saving here. Because the costs are happening now. The costs are happening right now in real time. And we all know this. And anybody who just says, don't worry about tomorrow, is not worrying about the people who are suffering now. I'm worried about the people who are dying now, and I'm worried about the people who are losing their jobs now and losing their businesses now and losing their livelihoods and watching their dreams destroyed right now. I'm worried about all of those people. We should all be worried about all of those people. By the way, all of those people are still going to work. Okay, let's just be real about this. There are a lot of people out there, like for people who pretend that everybody has the luxury of staying home during this thing. They don't. There are a lot of people, particularly people who are working low-wage jobs, right? The people who the left says that people on the right don't care about. Those people are still going to work because they do not have a choice. Are they supposed to stay home and receive no check from the government until August? Is that the plan? Let me show you a picture. This is a picture yesterday from New York. Okay, New York is the epicenter of this thing. Okay, so this was put out yesterday, this tweet, by Yashar Ali. Okay, this is put out by ABC 7 New York. Quote, this is the number 2 train at about 6 p.m. Thursday evening in a photo provided to Eyewitness News by Progressive's Action Twitter account. The MTA says it's running as many trains as it can, but has been hobbled because of crews that are out sick or quarantined. Public health officials have said social distancing is the key to slowing the spread of the deadly COVID-19. New York remains the hardest hit place in the nation. This is the number two train, April 2nd, 6 p.m. That ain't social distancing, gang. That is mostly young minority people who I assume are coming back from their jobs at 6 p.m. Who are working, I assume, who are going to their jobs because they don't have the luxury of being members of the media who get to sit at home and broadcast because they're people who have to work jobs. Like, we're just not being realistic about any of this stuff. We're not. I want the social distancing as much as you. I want this over as fast as possible. I want everybody to lock down as fast as possible so it is over as fast as possible. All I want you to tell me is that it will be over when it's over. And no one can tell me it's going to be over when it's over. Like, nobody will. And you're, again, we're seeing real-time costs to this in Europe. The entire European Union may break apart over this thing. Now, you may not like the European Union, but that's a pretty major thing, is it not? That's a pretty significant countervailing concern, is it not? Meanwhile, the media is doing yeoman's work in misinforming people. So the New York Times has a piece today titled, The 1,000-Bed Comfort Was Supposed to Aid New York. It has 20 patients. It's a joke, said a top hospital executive whose facilities are packed with coronavirus patients. Note to the media. The Comfort was never supposed to house people with coronavirus. Why? Because, well, let's see, what happens when you have a ship? Let's call it a Diamond Princess cruise ship. And you put people with coronavirus on a contained area within a ship. What happens on that cruise ship? Well, it turns out everybody gets coronavirus, you idiots. The entire thing was designed to provide additional hospital beds, not ICU beds, not coronavirus beds. It was designed to increase the number of hospital beds available. Do you think the hotels in New York are being made over for ICUs and for ventilators? That's not what's happening. Nonetheless, the New York Times reports, Michael Schwartz reporting, such were the expectations for the Navy hospital ship USNS Comfort that when it chugged into New York Harbor this week, throngs of people momentarily forgetting the strictures of social distancing crammed together along Manhattan's west side to catch a glimpse. On Thursday, the huge white vessel, which officials had promised would bring succor to a city on the brink, sat mostly empty, infuriating executives at local hospitals. The ship's 1,000 beds are largely unused, its 1,200-member crew mostly idle. Only 20 patients had been transferred to the ship. If I'm blunt about it, it's a joke, said Michael Dowling, the head of Northwell Health, New York's largest hospital system. Everyone can say thank you for putting up these wonderful places and opening up these cavernous halls, but we're in a crisis here. We're on a battlefield. Okay, well, the Javits Center is open. The Samaritan's Purse Hospital in Central Park is open, and so is the USS Mercy, and it wasn't meant for people with coronavirus. That's not what it was designed to do. So excellent media coverage there. Also, in other excellent media coverage, the media are going nuts over this story of a commander of an aircraft carrier who was removed for a poor judgment because he publicly suggested that the entire aircraft carrier should be taken out of commission. The commanding officer was a guy named Captain Brett Crozier. He was relieved of command by Carrier Strike Group Commander Rear Admiral Stuart Baker because he showed poor judgment because he wrote a public memo warning Navy leadership that decisive action was needed to save the lives of the ship's crew. There's a memo that was written by Crozier earlier this week to the Navy's Pacific Fleet. Modley called Crozier's note a blast-out email to everyone he knows. Okay, so the guy wasn't fired for saying that bad things are happening on the ship and we need to do something about it. He was fired because he broke chain of command by emailing, apparently, quote, everyone he knows, saying that a full-on battle carrier should be taken out of commission. If you think the military should be allowing its commanding officers to blast out full-on emails to everyone they know about taking 1/11th of America's chief naval capacity off the table, of course, top Democrats slammed the move in a statement on Thursday. They said this is a destabilizing move that will put our service members at greater risk. Oh, really? More destabilizing than taking an entire battle carrier out of commission? Well done, media, for completely ignoring how militaries are supposed to work. Wow. So it is chaotic out there. We need answers as fast as possible from the epidemiologists. Let's listen to the experts, guys. And experts, do better. Give us some more information. Tell us how this is going to go. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar says that the Trump administration is giving people who lost their jobs and health insurance a chance to enroll in the Affordable Care Act.
If you were employed and had insurance through your employer and you've now lost your job and lost that insurance, you now do have a special enrollment period where you may enroll in the individual exchanges of the Affordable Care Act. So that's existing law. Then what we're doing is taking from that $100 billion to providers, taking money and saying, if you're a provider and you care for anybody who's uninsured, we're going to compensate you for doing that.
Meanwhile, the search for daughter and grandson of former Maryland Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Kennedy Townsend is now a recovery mission. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson, quarantined and running a fever, is urging the public to continue to stay indoors. Here's correspondent Zaria Shackley.
Johnson tested positive for the new coronavirus on March the 26th and spent 7 days in quarantine, as recommended by UK health officials. Johnson says that although he's feeling better, he still has a fever and is following guidance to stay in isolation until his temperature has returned to normal. Johnson, in a video message, warned people not to break the national lockdown on what is expected to be a warm, sunny weekend across much of the UK. Zaria Shackley, London.
The Trump administration's urging Americans to cover their faces in public to reduce the spread of the coronavirus and is limiting exports of medical supplies. Hobby Lobby says that the ongoing threat of the coronavirus has forced it to close its stores until further notice. The Oklahoma City-based arts and crafts chain says it is furloughing all of its store employees, many of its corporate and distribution workers. Joe Biden set to announce a committee to oversee his vice presidential selection process. More on these stories at townhall.com.
If you're getting burned in the market, listen up. The last couple of months have been alarming to thousands of portfolios. We know that many of you are getting pummeled with this current market volatility. Guess what? Today is the day that stops. We've created a cutting-edge interactive program that will help you improve your current financial situation. If you're looking to turn your days in the red into consistent months in the green, introducing the Trader on the Street Challenge. The Trader on the Street Challenge has been designed to help you achieve the profitability and consistency of a Wall Street professional. We know that consistency is one of the most crucial components to becoming a successful trader. And that's why we've carefully built the perfect way to incentivize struggling traders to improve their capabilities. So if you're tired of rolling with the punches and are willing to rise to the occasion of this unique new challenge, text STREET to 48542 to learn more. Text the word STREET to 48542. Text STREET to 48542 to get started today.
White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow was warning that there is no question that the economy will get worse in the weeks ahead.
This is temporary. You know, but I know temporary can be very painful. I understand that.
Kudlow goes on to say,
everybody have a little optimism, a little hope, a little prayer, and we'll try to get through the weeks ahead.
And Kudlow again reminds Americans that there's more economic pain ahead.
We have not seen the worst of it. I don't want to sugarcoat it. And that's why we have created the largest rescue package in history. And if we need to do more, we will do more.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says health care must be at the top of the list in the next coronavirus rescue package. The Republican leader said that he wants Congress to focus on correcting any shortcomings in the just-passed $2.2 trillion bill and rely on health care experts for solutions to wipe out the virus. News and analysis at townhall.com. Republican lawmakers are asking President Trump to aid oil producers whose industry has been devastated by the coronavirus pandemic.
A group of more than 40 House Republicans signed on to the letter urging President Trump to consider battered oil producers and the impact that could have on energy security and independence. The lawmakers urged the president to lower the royalties paid by companies that drill on federal lands, help stabilize relations between Russia and Saudi Arabia, and replace Obama-era methane regulations with what they call cost-effective guidelines. Democrats fought to ensure that no benefits from the recently passed coronavirus stimulus bill would benefit oil companies. Bob Agnew reporting.
A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit by fantasy sports contestants who claimed that they were damaged by sign stealing in Major League Baseball. Five men had sued MLB, MLB Advanced Media, the Houston Astros, and the Boston Red Sox in federal court in Manhattan. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
This is Ted Leidy with the Northern Firearms Instruction Personal Protection Tip of the Day. If you have the ability to park in a garage or carport, do it. Criminals identify dark streets and alleys to target unsuspecting victims who are distracted with loading or unloading packages or children. Another important part of your personal protection plan may be the use of a firearm. If that's the case, give us a call at NFI at 999-1822 or to find and register for one of our popular CCW or other firearm safety courses, visit us online at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, this is Linda Bodd. Join me May 15th, 2020 at 12 o'clock p.m. in the Redding Rodeo Grounds in Redding, California. Chicks and Chaps will be conducting their annual fundraiser to benefit local individuals impacted by breast cancer. The event will be emceed by yours truly with guest speaker Lynn Fritz, licensed marriage and family therapist. Limited to 100 tickets, which are available through Facebook at Chicks and Chaps Redding or through reddingrodeo.com. Think pink and see you there.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show, bringing you all of your coronavirus-related updates, since it is literally the only thing happening on the entire planet. I mean, really, that's the whole thing. And the updates are not fantastic. Out of New York today, at least 400 additional deaths just in the state of New York. Yesterday, in New York, there were some 319 total deaths, so the rate of death is escalating. That does make sense. Even if the testing has started to flatten a little bit, you'd expect to see the deaths increasing because deaths lag testing, right? People stay in the hospital for a week and then they die, or 3 days in the hospital and then they die. Actually, the United States is not being hit hardest among world countries at this point. It is still France, actually. Over the last couple of days, France is absolutely getting destroyed. France has had over 1,000 deaths a day each of the last couple of days. Yesterday, France had almost 1,400 deaths. Spain had some 961. Italy had 760, so they were down fairly substantially. We are expecting the number of deaths in the United States more broadly to climb. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, he says the curve is continuing to rise, so they have not seen the complete flattening they were hoping for.
The curve continues to go up. The number of tests has reached a new high. We did over 21,000 tests. Thank you to our great health department. We have over 10,000 new cases, 102,000 total tested positive, 14,000 hospitalized, 3,700 ICU patients, 8,800 patients discharged. That's good news. Number of deaths, highest single increase in the number of deaths since we started, 2,300 to 2,900 deaths.
So obviously the curve is, as he says, rising. Now, the testing is rising, too. And one of the things that we're starting to see in the United States is more tests and less positive results, which is probably a good thing. You want the number of tests to rise. All of this is perfectly expected. The question is when it levels off. Now, by the supposed models that are being used, by the supposed best available models, they're expecting that the biggest day for New York is going to come sometime next week. And that day is supposedly April 9th, I believe, is what they are talking about in New York. I'm looking at the study. Yeah, April 9th is when they say the peak resource use will be. They're expecting on that day that there should be something like 731 deaths in the state of New York alone. According to this model, the peak death day will actually be April 7th. So that will be the peak projection in daily deaths, and that will come about a week from now, according to the study. Then the numbers are supposed to start declining such that by May 1st, the number of deaths in New York will be approximately 20 a day, according to those models. Now, the rest of the country is lagging New York. New York, of course, is the hot spot, but there are other cities around the country that are experiencing significant problems as well. Detroit is seeing significant problems. New Orleans is seeing significant problems. Andrew Cuomo did announce today that the Javits Center, which has been converted over for hospital beds, he says it will be coronavirus only.
Javits is going to be converted to a COVID facility. Frankly, the federal agencies were not eager to do that. FEMA was not eager to do that. I called the president. I spoke to him about it yesterday morning. Yesterday afternoon, the president called me back, said he spoke to the task force. They would grant the request to transition the Javits Center to COVID only. That adds 2,500 beds. So that is a very big deal. And I thank the president for doing it.
Okay, by the way, there was a New York Times report suggesting that the USS Comfort was failing. This is the thousand-bed hospital ship that was sent to New York. And the suggestion by the New York Times is that this was a failed move because it wasn't being used for coronavirus patients. Right, because it's a ship. That's not what it's for. Right? Yeah, coronavirus on a ship. Bad idea. We just found that out with an aircraft carrier. We knew that already with the Diamond Princess. Those are hospital beds that are being added for people with other conditions. And those people, by the way, are not going to the hospitals generally. And if you've got something else that is going on with you right now, you try and find a way to stay home because you don't want to exactly be crowding into an ER filled with coronavirus patients when you're trying to avoid coronavirus. So it's not a giant shock that the USS Comfort is not filled. Nonetheless, that was treated as some sort of great federal failure and revelation of failure by the New York Times because this is what they do. Meanwhile, Governor Cuomo also said he has signed an executive order to seize ventilators and PPE. We will see whether this is effective in gaining additional ventilators or how necessary this is. Obviously, he's using all the powers at his disposal to seize ventilators. He had said yesterday that New York was about 6 days away from exhausting its supply of ventilators. Now, whether this means seizing sort of privately held ventilators or whether this means seizing personal protective equipment that is existing at private hospitals is unclear to me. Here's Andrew Cuomo explaining his executive order.
I'm not going to get into a situation where we know we are running out of ventilators and we could have people dying because there are no ventilators, but there are hospitals in other parts of the state that have ventilators that they're not using. I'm just not going to allow us to go there. I think it would be wholly irresponsible. So I'm going to sign an executive order that says the state can take ventilators and PPE from institutions that don't need them now and redeploy them to other parts of the state and other hospitals that do need them.
Well, that of course, is not a great shock. My guess is that if you went to those hospitals and you asked if you could borrow them, that would probably be enough. Meanwhile, Cuomo said the federal government stockpile is not enough to handle the need. This has become an area of contention because yesterday, as we will see, Jared Kushner talked about this at the White House. Here was Andrew Cuomo suggesting that the federal government stockpile is not sufficient, which, of course, is true, which is one of the reasons why the state was supposed to prep this. I mean, we do have a federal system here. And again, it is bizarre to me that we are constantly looking to the federal government for solutions when states were designed in order to handle precisely these things at the local level, because very often it turns out that these needs are local rather than national in scope. In this particular case, it ends up being national, but it turns out that the federal government is supposed to be the backstop. It is not, in fact, supposed to be the line of first resort. Here is Cuomo.
In the ICU, you need a ventilator. And if you don't have a ventilator, the process stops, and we don't have enough ventilators. We're doing everything possible. Splitting of ventilators, using BiPAP machines by this new protocol, using the anesthesia ventilators. We're talking to the federal government to be as helpful as they can from the federal stockpile. But in truth, I don't believe the federal stockpile has enough to help all the states.
Okay, well, that is probably true. It is also true that the federal stockpile of ventilators was not touched for literally two decades, and that the federal stockpile of masks was not replenished after the H1N1 flu in 2009. We'll get to more of this in just one second because this has become a source of controversy. But first, you're spending an awful lot of time listening to content right now. And why wouldn't you be? I mean, you're at home. You're spending a lot of time on the phone. You need a great pair of earbuds. A pair of earbuds can fit your ear properly. It's going to look good. It's not going to look ridiculous. And as I say, it's going to be basically tailor-made for your ear. This is why you need Raycons. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, they're the best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycons wireless earbuds, they're comfortable, perfect for on-the-go listening and for taking phone calls as well. Unlike some of those other wireless options, Raycons are stylish and discreet, no dangling wires, no stems. Raycon has already sold out 4 times in the last 6 months. Order now before it is too late. These Raycon wireless earbuds, they're not going to last in stock. Also, again, they're not one-size-fits-all. They fit your ear really well because they come with like a little metal card and it has a bunch of fits for your ear. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Ben. That is buyraycon.com/Ben for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. buyraycon.com/Ben. That is buyraycon.com/Ben. So yesterday there was big controversy because Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and one of his chief advisors, he showed up at the press conference at the White House. And this, of course, is always a source of consternation for the media. They don't understand why Jared Kushner would be there, as though all sorts of government employees and advisors are well-versed in these sorts of specifics. I remember, I'm old enough to remember when Ben Rhodes, a failed novelist, was one of the national security advisors to Barack Obama, and nobody seemed to care. And Tommy Veter, who made his career originally driving a van for Barack Obama, was made one of his chief advisors as well. So suffice it to say, I don't think that it is the end of the world that Jared Kushner was speaking. I just don't know why they would do this as a matter of policy. In any case, Kushner, I mean, he just gets smacked every time by the media, every single time. Anyway, Kushner gets up and he's talking about the federal stockpile, and people go nuts over what he says about the federal stockpile.
And the notion of the federal stockpile was it's supposed to be our stockpile. It's not supposed to be state stockpiles that they then use. So we're encouraging the states to make sure that they're assessing the needs. They're getting the data from their local situations and then trying to fill it with the supplies that we've given them.
What he's saying, and it's pretty obvious what he's saying, is that people come to us and then we determine how to distribute the resources from the federal stockpile, which is why it is called the federal stockpile. Nonetheless, this led people to go nuts. How dare he? He's suggesting that the federal stockpile is for what? Federal people? Like, that's not what he's suggesting. Everybody knows what the federal stockpile is. Nonetheless, they went nuts on him because this is what we do now. Now, in reality, the Trump administration has been pretty proactive throughout all of this. You know who's admitting as much? Gavin Newsom, who, again, for admitting this sort of stuff, does not get the sort of glowing media coverage that Andrew Cuomo does. Here's Gavin Newsom on with the execrable Joy Behar from The View.
We got that mercy ship down here in Los Angeles. That was directly because he sent it down here. 2,000 medical units came to the state of California, these FMS, these field medical stations. And that's been very, very helpful. And to the extent we're going to need more, we will. And I'll let you know in a few weeks if that relationship continues.
So, you know, it is always amazing to me how the people who are receiving the most plaudits from the media are the people who are screaming the most against the federal government, as opposed to Newsom, who, again, I don't like him as a governor. I think he's a terrible governor, but he's doing a lot better in achieving all the resources that Californians need at this point and not spending all day on TV complaining that the federal government has somehow failed him. A little more on that in a moment. But first, let's talk about how when you emerge from this government-created cocoon, you want to look your best. You want that smile to just be glowing. You want your teeth to be straight. But you can't go to an orthodontist right now, so why not do it all at home and save yourself money in the process? Check out Candid. Unlike braces, Candid clear aligners are comfortable, removable, totally invisible. Plus, you never have to set foot in a doctor's office or a waiting room. Candid delivers clear aligners directly to your door. With other remote clear aligner options, you may never hear from a doctor. Candid only works with licensed orthodontists, never general dentists, which means you can get the same treatment oversight you'd get by seeing an orthodontist in person, but you don't have to do it, which is exactly what you need right now. You might be feeling nervous about an upcoming wedding or a graduation. With Candid, the average treatment length is just 6 months, and you'll start seeing results well before then. Now is a great time to get started on your scan of your teeth and get started on the process. I've done it myself. The process is really easy, and you can do it from home. For a limited time, you can get started with $75 off by using code Ben at CandidCo.com/Ben. That is CandidCo.com/Ben. Use code Ben for $75 off. CandidCo.com/Ben. Use promo code Ben. Coming up, we're going to be joined by an expert from the Heritage Foundation to talk about the economic fallout from all of this. Spoiler alert, it ain't great. It's the Ben Shapiro Show.
My husband, Alex Hesse, was hit by an IED in Afghanistan.
I was point man on foot patrol, and I stopped on the bomb. Lost some legs and left hand in an explosion.
DAV helps veterans of every generation to get the benefits they've earned.
To see Alex learning to snow ski, that's life-changing.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
This has meant so much. Thank you, DAV.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you who waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast One Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So while we watch the economy crater and the coronavirus rates increase, we are constantly asking the question here, when and how do we draw the balance between economic need and going back to a normal economy and what is obviously a pretty deadly virus? Rachel Gresler is a research fellow in economics, budget, and entitlements over at the Heritage Foundation. Rachel, thanks for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So why don't we begin with this? How bad is the economic pain going to be in the next couple of weeks? Obviously, we have seen the greatest increase in unemployment in American history over the last 2 weeks, with 10 million people added to the unemployment rolls. How bad is this going to get?
Well, it's definitely going to get a lot worse. I think we're going to see millions more, potentially tens of millions more people lose their jobs over the next couple of weeks. But they could take a very different direction. You know, Congress has passed enormous measures, particularly in the $2.3 trillion CARES Act, that are aimed at trying to keep people attached to their jobs and to keep them employed even if they aren't working. And there are some things in that act that definitely will help do that, but then there are also some things that are going to push back in the other direction and could potentially increase unemployment.
So the CARES Act, which Congress passed, the single largest spending bill in the history of planet Earth, as you mentioned, it has some good stuff, it has some bad stuff. What is the good stuff and what is the bad stuff in the CARES Act?
Well, the good stuff is particularly on the smaller business side. And so the biggest thing that will help those smaller businesses with fewer than 500 employees and also the restaurant and hotel industry is the ability to get a loan worth up to 2.5 months of their typical payroll costs. And that loan can be forgiven as long as they keep their employees paid. And it can also be used to pay their rent, their utilities, their mortgage. And so this really is targeted at trying to just kind of bridge the gap of where we were and where we hope we can be when we, you know, bounce back and keep people employed in the short term, because there was nothing fundamental wrong about the economy going into this that says people will be unemployed for a long period of time. So that will do a lot to help those workers remain employed in the short term and keep their job coming out of this. The most problematic component is on the unemployment insurance side, and it absolutely makes sense in this situation to increase access to those unemployment benefits, to expand them to new workers, to have them be eligible for longer periods of time, and even to increase the benefit levels from the typical 50% and instead replace 100%, because a lot of these workers have lost jobs through no fault of their own and actual government orders that have forced businesses to shut their doors. The problem is there's an extra $600 bonus unemployment insurance benefit that the federal government is going to pay to every unemployed worker, regardless of how much they were making before they lost their job. And this creates a situation where a majority of Americans will actually make more money collecting unemployment insurance than they would if they'd stayed in their jobs. And coupled with the fact that there is a provision in the bill that allows workers to quit their jobs because of a direct result of COVID-19, as opposed to the normal requirement that you are actually fired from your job, it kind of puts the ball in workers' court to say whether or not they're going to keep their jobs, even if it's offered to them. They might have the choice between keeping their paycheck, even though they're sitting at home, versus becoming unemployed. And the reality is, if you're a minimum wage worker, you can make $8,000 more over the next 4 months by taking that unemployment insurance, leaving your job, than you would make if you stayed in your job. So that could be really problematic and lead to millions of more people becoming unemployed. And that's, you know, has long-term consequences if those jobs aren't there when they want them back, or if workers aren't willing to come back when employers want to pick back up on production. We end up with a much deeper and more prolonged downturn than we would need otherwise.
We're speaking with Rachel Gressler from Heritage Foundation. So, Rachel, the Democrats have been pushing for yet another round of stimulus. The Trump administration has suggested $2 trillion in infrastructure spending. What is the purpose of all of this? I mean, honestly, what we're doing right now is basically hold tight until the economy can come back. That should be the focus. But it seems like everybody is trying to tack on ancillary priorities, ancillary spending. We just spent more money than any government has ever spent in the history of humanity in a two-week period. I mean, we're going to spend $6 trillion from the Federal Reserve and from Congress. So where exactly do people think the money is coming from, and why are they prioritizing these sort of side priorities here?
Exactly. I think it's really premature to be talking about enacting another, quote, stimulus package when we haven't even got checks out the door. Today was the first day that businesses could apply for loans. They're not going to get that money for a while. So we have no idea what the positive impact has been of that first over $2 trillion package. And to talk about stimulating the economy now at a time when people can't physically go out and work, they can't go to a lot of the places that they would spend their money. What's the point of putting more money out there now when it's going to be future workers and taxpayers that are going to be bearing the cost of those things? I think we need to wait and see what the benefits have been thus far and not be talking about all these things that have been priorities for one party or another over months, years, decades, and just tossing them into something that's supposed to be a temporary and targeted response to address a public health crisis. Not to get every policy that you want enacted tossed in there at the same time. It could really cause this to be a much bigger problem than it needs to be, and to set in place policies that really will not help the economy recover.
So, Rachel Gressler from Heritage Foundation, how fast do you think the economy will recover when we come out of this? There are going to be some systemic changes to the economy, obviously. It could take a while before restaurants reopen the way that they were open before. We could see a lot of people who are social distancing and working from home. We could see supply lines have to completely shift. There's a lot of prediction in the early going here that this would be a V-shaped recovery, that we'd be able to shut down the economy, touch a button, restart the economy. Now it appears that we're going to have to bring workers back tranche by tranche. So does this look more like a U-shaped recovery or a V-shaped recovery?
We don't know yet. And, you know, a lot of it depends on the health part of this and how long we need to keep things closed or to only partially reopen them. You know, going into this, there was nothing fundamentally about the economy that said we wouldn't be able to recover relatively quickly. And certainly if we're sending money out there and people are keeping their incomes through these payroll protection programs, or the checks are going out to people and they can't spend it now, but as soon as businesses come back online, they can spend it. that will help us to have a quicker recovery. But there are some headwinds, you know, the UI benefit potentially making those workers unavailable to bring production back online. So we don't really know what's going to happen, but it's definitely going to be, you know, a couple of months before we start opening these businesses back up. And it's not going to be that one date is set and everybody comes online again and every worker returns. You know, it is going to be gradual. And I think that, you know, we're looking at more towards the end of the year when we could even hope for seeing an economy return to some normalcy.
Well, Rachel Gressler, Heritage Foundation, really appreciate your insight. Stay safe out there, or as I've been saying to people, stay safe in there. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, we're going to be taking your calls at 855-236-3228, 855-236-3228. You're listening to The Ben Shapiro Show.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio. What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
I'm Carlene Niver, and I have some exciting news about my restaurant, Deja Vu, voted best breakfast. We are now serving beer and wine to complement your experience with us. Try one of our many flavors of mimosas, or try one of our new delicious creations, like Morning Sunshine, our version of a screwdriver. For our coffee lovers, we are known for our cozy atmosphere with a mixture of traditional and specialty drinks. I invite you to start your day with us, whether you are craving breakfast or lunch, located in the historic Lorenz Hotel in the heart of downtown Reading on California Street, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge with Brad Dacus.
Suicide and depression have reached record highs, leaving communities feeling helpless and broken. Church planting is quickly becoming one of the best ways to transform ravaged neighborhoods into a place where people are cared for and able to forge a relationship with God who brings hope and purpose.
Stay informed on religious freedoms. Receive our weekly email newsletter, The Legal Insider, at pji.org.
Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast Run Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast Run Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. Register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. We're taking your calls at 855-236-3228. That's 855-236-3228. Alex in Indiana, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Alex.
Hey, so my question is about Joe Biden. And my question is we're seeing more and more that Joe Biden is just an absent, you know, human being that the lights are on, but no one's home, to the point where, you know, his wife had to drag him out from in front of the cameras because he just didn't know where he was. And my question is at what point does either the family or the campaign have to morally step in and say, hey, Joe, you can't do this for 4 years? And are the voters going to be responsive to these continued videos of him just showing absolute, you know, mental deterioration?
I mean, I think that the latter question is the one that matters. Nobody in his family is obviously going to step in and say, Joe, you just won the Democratic nomination. We're going to need you to step down now. Like, that's not – especially when the alternative is the crazed communist in the other corner. So it's not like the Democrats have a lot of backup options. Alex, I mean, the gaffes are embarrassing. I mean, there's no question. He has made a fool of himself. He looks terrible in these interviews. He's basically banked on being a dead person running. And that's not a terrible place to be when you're running against President Trump, who obviously has problems and flaws of his own. The problem is, the more that Biden needs to raise money, the more he needs to be on camera. And the more he needs to be on camera, the more often he says dumb stuff. And when I say dumb stuff, I mean, like, he doesn't seem like he is all there. Like, today, there's a clip floating around that I've been talking about a little bit, in which he suggests that we shouldn't be holding up the checks going out just so Donald Trump can sign them personally. Does he actually think Donald Trump is going to sign 300 million checks, that he's going to sit there with his marker and sign 300 million checks? What the hell are you talking about? But there's one like this every day from Joe Biden. Yesterday, he said that he had 3 answers to the pandemic and then proceeded to Rick Perry it and give only 2. And that's like every single day with Joe Biden. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And the Trump campaign is going to use that to great effect. They're going to say, look, this guy's not with it. This guy doesn't know what he is doing. Now, the best contrast for that would be for the president to be disciplined. I mean, I keep saying this over and over. A disciplined President Trump would be very difficult to beat. The problem, of course, is that if you are given the choice between erratic on a personality basis and erratic because he's senile, a lot of people might choose erratic because he's senile, meaning like, okay, well, other people are going to be doing his job. Everybody's just going to put old Joe in the back eating cream of wheat, and then we're just going to do everything he's supposed to do, as opposed to, you know, President Trump being kind of congenitally volatile and high energy. So is high energy volatile better or worse than low energy quasi-senile? That may, in fact, be the choice that is presented to the American public in 2020, which is why I keep recommending to President Trump, like, hem it in, dude. Like, really, just like, hold it together here, because Joe Biden is a pretty target-rich environment in terms of what he has said, what he does. If there are any debates, I assume there will be, but without a crowd, if there are any debates, then President Trump is going to be in a sort of commanding position, just because whoever is more energetic in a debate tends to do very well. And Joe Biden was the exception to the rule, but only because everybody else bumper carred out of his way in 2020, right? Everybody else sort of took each other out, and Biden was left standing in the center, not knowing where he was, you know, back to the camera like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. So no, that's sort of where things stand, Alex.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ben.
No, I appreciate you listening to the show, and thanks so much for the call. Ben in San Diego, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Ben.
Hey, Ben. Thank you for taking my call today. I really appreciate the opportunity. My question for you is, I am a working professional inside of hospitality. I was actually just recently laid off about 2 weeks ago with the whole pandemic that's going on. And as one person that's a working professional, I always like to focus on, you know, who it is that I am as a manager, what it is that I can learn, you know, who I used to be, who I am now, where it is that I see myself going. And I was kind of asking, you know, you the same question as one working professional to another. Yourself, where do you see yourself as 5 years ago? Who do you see yourself as now? And where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years in your professional career?
So, honestly, I had a pretty good idea of where I wanted to be like a solid 15 years ago. I knew I wanted to do radio. I knew that I wanted to be in politics. I was writing a syndicated column when I was 17, so my career path was already fairly well set. And then it was just a question of getting my expertise up to par, getting my skill set up to par, and making myself a marketable commodity in the area where I wanted to be. And that meant an awful lot of work. It meant doing an awful lot of late nights and doing stuff for free. And my wife could tell you, I remember, you know, this would have been 2010, probably 10 years ago. We were first married. And I would get up at like 5 a.m. on Sunday mornings just so I could do a local radio show down in Orlando for free. It was like a one-hour radio show, no callers, just me talking into a microphone 3,000 miles away in Los Angeles. So, you know, if you have a goal in mind, then you can tailor your skill set to reach it. So I kind of knew where I wanted to be. Where I am now is kind of where I wanted to be. My own image of myself has changed a little bit because, you know, back in the Bush era, you know, sort of simple partisan lines were simpler in some ways. It was, you know, things were a little bit clearer in the sense that there were less cross currents. There was less cross cutting. In some ways, things have become clearer because the Democrats have become so radical. But in some ways, things have become a little bit less clear because there are a lot of big government advocates inside the Republican Party now. There are a lot of people inside the Republican Party who are willing to excuse particular behavior that I don't find particularly compelling. I'll just put it this way. George W. Bush, as a human being, not in terms of policy, as a human being, he was easier to defend as a human being than Donald Trump is. In terms of policy, he's actually less easy to defend than Donald Trump is. So, you know, I think that my image of myself sort of changed over time. And as I matured from partisan fighter to, yes, I'm a partisan. Yes, I'm a conservative, but a partisan on behalf of conservatism rather than on behalf of Republicanism. And when you're younger, you know, you sort of see the parties as solid repositories of your ideas. And as you get older, you realize that the parties very often are not, and that you have to stand above and beyond party because the party is just a mechanism for pushing forward certain policies, and sometimes the party is going to represent you well, and sometimes the party is not going to represent you well. So I think that's changed. As far as, you know, where I see myself 5 years from now, I hope that I'm constantly reading. I actually try to take criticism. One of the hard things about being in any job is trying to weed out the legitimate criticism of you from the people who just want to tear you down and hurt you. The more prominent you become, the more that takes place. You know, there's a certain number of people who are trying to give you honest advice, and the best people, the people you value the most, are the people who try to give you honest advice about ways that you can better yourself and better your skill set and are not trying to tear you down. I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm very grateful that before, you know, I had actual real success in the fields of which I had chosen, I was married. That makes me happy because it means that my wife is always there to give me a reality check. My parents, my business partner, like we're always there to give people reality checks. But what I would say is that, you know, I try to aspire to be the kind of person who can take criticism, and I think it's a very important quality, and I hope to retain that 5 years from now.
Well, that's excellent feedback. Thank you for sharing that. And if I have any criticism for you, it's maybe just slow down a little bit. We'll try and catch up to you.
Yeah, dude, I've been getting this one. This is one of those ones where I know I have to, and I know that I should, and I just cannot. This has been an ongoing battle for me my entire career, and it's everyone in my family. It's crazy. I mean, everyone in my family speaks this way. I don't know whether it's a Jewish thing. I don't know. The Jews I know do tend to speak faster than people who I know who are not Jewish. So maybe it's a Jewish thing, or maybe it's just a peculiarity of the Shapiro family. You should basically when my entire family is together, at a certain point we actually start speaking so fast that time moves backwards and we've all de-aged a couple of years. So Ben, I appreciate the call. Daniel in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Daniel.
Hey Ben, how you doing? I just wanted to say thank you for always sharing facts and calling people out on their BS. You're the only one I can always rely on when it comes to news. But my question is, what do you think the consequences after this is all said and done are going to be for China, if there are going to be, and what do you think they should be? Keeping in mind
I think
that
the consequences...
they just ramped up on their military. That's what I read.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get into a military confrontation with China because the costs are too high. But the costs are going to be international to China. I think that businesses are going to completely revise how they do their supply chains. I think they're going to find other countries to move their supply chains, which will in effect be a very good thing. In fact, I think that the government should pursue legislation along these lines, that if you are in some sort of industry that is in any way vital to medical health or national security, that your supply lines have to be flexible enough that even if you're using a Chinese supply company, you need to have an alternative supply company that can ramp up almost immediately in another area of the world. I think that sanctions ought to be leveraged against China. I think that we ought to keep a travel ban on China until every wet market is shut down in China and until China starts to lock up its facilities. Like, we actually need organizations in China that are monitoring how they do. If it turns out that this thing was leaked from some sort of lab, we need you know, actual measures on the ground to verify that their laboratories are safe and secure. And our long-term goal in China should, in fact, be regime change. That does not mean that we're going to attack them. It does not mean that we are going to get into a military confrontation with them. But just as our long-term goal with Russia was regime change, and that never changed throughout the Cold War, that should, in fact, be our long-term goal with China. This is not a regime that can be trusted. This is not a regime that we should be trying to do business with. This is a regime we should be trying to isolate and box in, and it's a regime we should not be strengthening with our dollars, and neither should Europe. There are other countries on Earth that desperately need our dollars and that we can work with much more easily, and they're not going to lie to us. And frankly, it would be much better for us to outsource our supply lines to Mexico than it would be for us to outsource our supply lines to China if we're going to choose to outsource supply lines at all. I mean, at least if we did it in Mexico, we're shoring up somebody who's alongside our southern border. So if we strengthen their economy, then presumably we get less illegal immigration. We do it in China, all we're doing is strengthening an evil communist regime that could unleash a pandemic on the globe or grab territory in the South China Sea and threaten our allies.
Exactly, right. So you don't think that there's anything crazy going on with China adding certain things to their military right now?
No, I mean, I think China is ramping up its military. Bill Gertz has done some good reporting there for the Washington Times. He has a book about China. I recommended one on my podcast maybe 4 months ago about China ramping up its military capacity, trying to use its Belt and Road program in order to drive alliances, trying to use Huawei as a tip of the spear for 5G and then grabbing data from people that they can, you know, commit intellectual property theft and fraud. Everybody should be on notice that China is what China is at this point. If you're not on notice, then you're being a fool and you've got your head in the sand. Really appreciate the call, Daniel. All right, we're going to take more of your calls in a moment at 855-236-3228. That's 855-236-3228. First, you're spending a lot of time at home right now, aren't you? Well, that means it would be kind of nice to know who is knocking at your door. I mean, you don't want them being, you know, if they're sneezing or wiping their nose or anything, you might want to think twice about opening that door. Just leave the package there. I'll come get it in a couple of hours. Ring gives you protection at every corner. It helps you create custom, affordable security for your home. Ring detects motion when people come onto your property. Ring's video doorbells let you answer the door, check in on your home anytime from anywhere. Ring helps you stay connected to your home anywhere in the world. So if there's a package delivery, a surprise visitor, you'll get an alert. You'll be able to see, hear, and speak to them all from your phone, which is really convenient and really safe. Get peace of mind knowing that your family is safe and that your property is safe in these difficult times. Get a special offer on the Ring Welcome Kit when you go to ring.com/Shapiro. I like to know who's on my property at all times. When I'm home, particularly so. The Welcome Kit includes the Ring Video Doorbell 2 and Chime Pro. It's all you need to start building that custom security for your home today. Just go to ring.com/Shapiro. That is ring.com/Shapiro. Again, ring.com/Shapiro. I've been relying on Ring devices for years at this point. You should too. If it's good enough for me, I think it's good enough for you as well. It really is fantastic. Ring.com/Shapiro. Okay, coming up, we're going to take more of your calls at 855-236-3228. That is 855-236-3228. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Al here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call?
Coast Run Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast Run Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick and proud aunt. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing. But not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. One in six. She doesn't have the energy because she's hungry. School lunch will be her only meal today. It breaks my heart that this is the reality in our country, but it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. This food is then provided to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about using your imagination, learning, and having fun. These children shouldn't have to miss out on simply being a kid because they're hungry. To find out how you can help end childhood hunger in your community, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show, number 855-236-3228, 855-236-3228. Cameron in Alabama, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Cameron.
Hey, Ben. I just want to say first off that you're one of my inspirations, and I really enjoyed your Right Side of History book.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
my question
it.
For you today. My question for you today is going to be off a little bit of the coronavirus topic, get on something a little bit more of a cultural level. What is your view on the, like, what's your advice for someone like my age? I'm 27 years old, and, you know, we're living in sort of what I believe is a relaxed sex culture. What is your, what is your advice on that, too? Because I feel like you said a long time ago at Young American Foundation that, you know, people use sex as it being disposable. And I'm just curious, like, what's your advice for someone in my age now in the dating world? Obviously, right now, obviously, it's not a good idea because of the coronavirus, but in general.
Yeah. I will say that I have never seen a better attempt to dissuade casual sexual encounters than coronavirus. It's pretty if that was God's plan, I'm not sure I like the plan, God, but it's effective. It's very effective. Like human beings just never seeing each other ever again. But in any case, as far as the general tenor, as I've said, if you want to date at these times and you are dating for something more than that, then you really ought to be dating in a religious context or at the very least in a committed context. And you can do that by simply saying straight up front with the girl that you are interested in a committed relationship and then tailoring your conversations toward that commitment. Everybody thinks that finding TV shows in common or things you like to do together, like that's the most important stuff. Here's the truth. 90% of people like TV. 90% of people like Disneyland. 90% of people like long walks on the beach, right? That most people have like things that are fun in common. But guess what? Marriage actually and dating, these are not actually times when you spend 90% of your time doing fun stuff. One of the things that I always found weird about shows like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette is they'd be like, oh, the best way to know somebody is to go on a hot air balloon ride with them. And I think like I have never been ever on a hot air balloon ride with my wife, like ever. Nor are these people, if they ever got married, going to spend more than one day out of presumably the next 60 years in a hot air balloon. Like, why in the world are you tailoring all of these dates to, like, things that will never happen again, nor would they ever happen in real life? You know what real life is like if you want to date seriously? Real life is you go and you see the person every single day, and you sit next to them when they are working, and you talk with them, and you get lunch with them, and you hang out with them, and you go do favors for them, and you get to know them really well. So I dated my wife for about 3 months, 3.5 months before we got engaged. We started dating September 5th of 2007, and September 2007. And we got engaged on December 22nd of 2007. So whatever that period is, that was our total dating time before we got engaged. And honestly, it was a pretty packed time because I made a commitment after the first couple of weeks when we dated, you know, once every 3-4 days, I made a commitment that I was going to go and see her every single day. And so after work, I would go and I would see her every single day. And if she had to work in the library at UCLA, I would literally bring her a meal. And I would sit there and I would do my work on one side of the table and she would do her work on the other side of the table. And I wouldn't bother her because she had work to do. And then we would take a break for 15 minutes and hang out and go back to doing work. Or if she really, you know, needed to focus, I would drop the meal and I would leave. Because you know what? That's kind of like what marriage is. That kind of is what marriage is. I haven't seen my wife at this point for a month. Like, I'm not kidding. For the last month, I've not seen my wife. Since our baby was born, I have not seen her at all. Why? Well, because number one, she is keeping odd hours because she has to nurse the baby. Number two, I have two other kids. One got the flu. Then a week later, another got the flu, which means I have to keep them both separate from my wife and the baby so the baby doesn't get the flu. So I've seen my wife in the last month for a combined total of approximately 7.2 minutes. But the reason that the relationship can survive that is because I have the security of knowing that life was like that before, and I've spent all sorts of time with her. You know what's the thing we're not doing right now? Going on a hot air balloon. So if you are worried about, you know, dating for commitment, then think about dating for commitment in realistic ways as opposed to what's the most romantic thing I can think of for every single date? What if I spread a rose petal lane down the middle of Main Street in Disneyland every single – like, that's not real life. So make dating more like real life, and then you're more likely to get a partner that you want for real life.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ben. I really appreciate it. Again, you're a real inspiration to me, and I follow the Daily Wire all the time. It's basically one of my main news sources.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Cameron. Really – appreciate the call. Jim in Illinois, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Jim.
Hey, Ben. I have a question about COVID-19. So I'm from Illinois, and obviously our economy is pretty much already a trash chute. Our governor has already said that we're hurting to just keep unemployment benefits up because so many businesses are closing. So in your opinion, should we keep everything locked up and people inside their houses, or will there come a day when we're just going to have to open things back up and let the disease kind of spread and get immunity, as horrible as that may sound?
I mean, I think that once we hit the summer, we're going to have to open things back up. And really what nobody is saying is that the great hope is that by early May, mid-May, that the virus wanes because it has burned through either a lot of the population already or because summer kills it off, or that we develop some sort of mitigating medications or that we have increased our ICU and ventilators so much that, you know, the people who need treatment can get treatment. But there's virtually nobody who expects that we're going to prevent tons and tons of people from getting this over the course of the next year. I mean, this is something I've been harping on, which is that none of the models suggest that people who are avoiding getting it right now are not going to get it in the fall. So the question is, how long can we keep this up? What's the purpose of it? Presumably the purpose is to buy us some time so that we can deal with it. But yes, people are going to go back to work. I think all of the talk about how we're going to have mass testing and tens of thousands of tests and serology tests so we know who's immune and all this, like, I can't see that being ramped up fast enough for summer. I think that in all likelihood, we go to sort of a rough and ready style of employment where everybody goes back to work. People continue to social distance. If you can work from home, you continue to work from home. And if you are under the age of 65 or under the age of 60 and you don't have pre-existing conditions, we're going to assume you don't have the virus. If you do get sick, you go home for 14 days. And that's pretty much how things go up until we have a vaccine, because this is not sustainable. It just is not. We're not going to be locked up for the next year, 12 to 18 months until we have a vaccine. Good luck. Good luck. I think it will come to an end. I'm hoping that the mitigating efforts are enough, but it could be ugly for the next few months. I do not think this is going to extend. I've talked to, at this point, probably dozens of doctors. I would say that virtually everybody agrees that by early summer, people are going to be getting back to work in some shape, fashion, or form. So I would assume by early summer, they mean like tail end of May, early June.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking my call.
I really appreciate it. All righty. Renee in Chicago, you're on the Ben Shapiro Show. Go for it, Renee.
Hey, Ben. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of yours. But I wanted to call in just to say I feel like I would like you to provide a little more perspective. I feel like you're not, in my personal opinion. of the governmental response to the virus that we're all experiencing and balanced that out and compared with the economic impact to all the lockdowns, as well as the rationale behind those lockdowns being primarily, from what I'm seeing, being based on models and all of the information that's coming out when folks are contrasting the projections for hospitalizations, ICU beds, for example. The actuals are coming in way under what the projection models have been coming in. So in my opinion, that's not that strong of a rationale to take away basic liberty. I'm in Illinois. We're in complete lockdown. And I feel like the models themselves are not a strong enough rationale. So I feel like that's not really being talked about on your show or any show, really.
Well, I mean, actually, I spent the entirety of the first hour of the show and all of today's podcast on this because it's exactly what I'm concerned about, too, is that these models are being trotted out there with a level of certainty that is not of benefit given the lack of data at this point. Now, again, lack of data doesn't mean that we should all just run out there willy-nilly, but it does mean that we should be thinking every day about what point do we have enough data where we can start talking about opening this thing back up. Really appreciate the call. All right, we're going to bring you all the coronavirus updates coming up. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. President Donald Trump has fired the intelligence watchdog who handled the complaint that triggered his impeachment. President Trump informed the Senate Intelligence Committee Friday of his decision to fire Michael Atkinson, but according to a letter obtained by the Associated Press, the supply chain for personal protective equipment has taken a huge hit during the coronavirus pandemic, so one hospital near Baltimore, Maryland, has started its own sewing operation to stock up on face masks.
Staff at Northwest Hospital in Randallstown is making sure their facilities are safe by producing face masks in a sanitary workshop across the street from the emergency room. Dr. Daniel Duran is a physician and chief innovation officer for LifeBridge Health.
A month ago, we didn't know that we would have to have a mask on everybody in our facility, but the more we learn about the virus and the more careful we want to be, that's what we're trying to be able to do.
Durant said their operation and others like it across the country could always use more willing volunteers, adding he's encouraged by the outpouring of support he's seen.
Whether it's donating shoes or PPE or meals, it's booing people's hopes right now.
I'm Shelley Adler.
President Trump nominating an inspector general for pandemic recovery.
Last week's CARES Act created the special inspector general position, as well as a panel appointed by Congress to monitor how the federal aid will be deployed. For Inspector General, the President is turning to Brian Miller, who currently serves in the office of the White House Counsel.
That is correspondent George Bonzani reporting. Former Maryland Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Kennedy Townsend says authorities have shifted from a rescue search to a recovery search as they look for her daughter and a grandson, Maeve Kennedy Townsend McCain, and McCain's 8-year-old son went missing while canoeing in the Chesapeake Bay. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Factor pain relief. It's natural pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at relieffactor.com and then order your 3-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than $1 a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your 3-week quick starter pack today. Relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com. Be the next success story.
As soon as we're back out in our yard, yep, we get company.
Dandelions, lurking crabgrass, and wheat thin grass. But Scout's Turf Builder Triple Action takes care of them all. Now, with one bag, you can kill weeds, prevent crabgrass for up to 4 months, and feed for greener grass. Triple Action, so your lawn thrives, guaranteed. Only from Scout's.
Weeds aren't welcome here.
This is a Scout's yard. Pick up a bag of Scout's Triple Action today.
One U.S. senator is demanding an investigation into a shortage of the ventilators needed for the coronavirus.
Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado is requesting an investigation into reports of what he suspects was mismanagement of ventilators in the Strategic National Stockpile. He makes the request in a letter to the Inspector General for the Department of Health and Human Services. The federal government has fewer than 10,000 ventilators in its emergency stockpile, and that demand will soon exceed capacity. President Trump is pressing to manufacture or procure some 100,000 more ventilators, but they're not expected to be available until late June. Bob Agnew reporting.
A federal agency has issued citations against a dozen companies in connection with last fall's deadly partial collapse of a hotel under construction in New Orleans. They include an engineering firm charged with a willful violation involving the design and approval of steel bolt connections that affected the structural integrity of the structure. Three people died. News and analysis at townhall.com. Workers at Walt Disney Company theme parks are feeling the effects of the coronavirus. Here's correspondent Ed Donahue.
The company says it doesn't know when Disneyland in California and Disney World in Florida will be open again. So workers whose jobs aren't considered necessary will be furloughed starting in 2 weeks. An exact number of workers wasn't released. 75,000 people work at Disney World, 31,000 at Disneyland. Workers have been paid since the parks closed because of the virus in the middle of last month. Disney says anyone furloughed will still get full health care benefits. I'm Ed Donahue.
Hobby Lobby says that the ongoing threat of the coronavirus has forced it to close its stores until further notice. The Oklahoma City-based arts and crafts chain says it is furloughing all of its store employees and many of its corporate and distribution workers. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hey, and welcome. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. A lot coming up for you this hour. A little bit later on in the hour, we're going to talk about the spat between Chuck Schumer and Donald Trump. Schumer sends an open letter to Trump. Trump sends the letter back to Schumer. They're mean to each other. Now Schumer's whining about it. We'll get to that. Plus, we'll get to the Democrats attempting to make permanent things that should not be permanent. We begin at this hour with the questioning of exactly what the models are telling us at this point, because this is the big question. Like, how long are we going to remain in this lockdown? People are getting furloughed, people taking salary cuts, people getting fired. I mean, it is a bad economic situation. We have watched the unemployment rates rise faster and higher than they have in American history. It makes the Great Depression look like Piker's game. I mean, really, like nothing. So the question is, how long can we keep this up? And why should we keep it up that long? And how long really should we keep it up, considering that the models that we are looking at only extend until August? Right? The models from the University of Washington only extend until August, but we have been told that we are not going to have a vaccine for this thing for quite a while, like 12 to 18 months. In fact, Dr. Anthony Fauci was saying that again today. He said the coronavirus vaccine could take a year.
I mean, I spoke to you about one that we've been dealing with where we're already in phase one trials and are two-thirds of the way through the phase one trial. And then I explained to you a few times that you then go into the next phase, which is phase two, to determine further immunogenicity. Does it give the kind of response that you'd like it to? And ultimately, does it work? That whole process still is going to take at least a year to a year and a half.
Okay, so if that's going to take a year to a year and a half, is the suggestion we're supposed to just stay at home for a year to a year and a half? And based on what? And why don't we have any models that suggest what happens when we come out of hibernation? Like, is there going to be a second wave? That University of Washington model doesn't say. Like, we have no idea. How do we get people to go back to work? What does going back to work actually look like? Now, there is some good news, and that is that perhaps there will be some drugs that come up that actually mitigate the effects of this thing. Here, there are some things we can do in the here and now. One is develop drugs. The other is increase the ICU beds, increase the ventilators, such that if there is a second wave in the fall, at least we have the capacity to take care of it. Dr. Fauci said the FDA has already said doctors can prescribe hydroxychloroquine off-label, which is definitely a good thing.
Well, first of all, this is an approved drug for another indication, and doctors can, and the FDA has made it very clear that doctors can prescribe it on what we call off-label. There's no inhibition for that. And so a considerable amount of drug was made available, as you remember, just a few days ago. But the FDA was very clear that they're not going to be inhibiting anyone from doing an off-label prescription of the drug.
And that is definitely, you know, a good thing. Also, among the other good things, there's a lot of talk about perhaps we should be using therapeutic plasma treatment. There's a doctor on Fox News mentioning just that today.
Well, the first studies here are just coming out, the results, and it seems that this convalescent plasma, which is the idea of taking antibodies from people who have recovered, so people who have figured out how to fight the virus through their antibodies, taking those and putting them into people who are sick and having trouble getting past the virus. So I look at it as very promising, and hopefully we can increase the numbers and get more information on that.
So there are some good things that are happening out there. It's just going to take a little while. So what can we learn from these studies? And the answer is not much, not much. I'm not the one saying this. Experts are saying this. Every model has to be taken with an enormous grain of salt. In fact, the models that have been used thus far do not match even what is being reported both in real time and also what cities are reporting as to what they expect. There's a journalist from The Atlantic pointing this out today, is that the expectation is that Washington, D.C. will not need ICU beds at time of highest priority. But Washington, D.C. is saying we're like 1,200 ICU beds short. So who the hell is right? This is all chaos. We don't know the answers. And so that's going to raise some pretty serious questions about, okay, let's say best case scenario, we all stick around with this thing until end of April and the death rates start to drop. And by the beginning of May, what we are seeing is a couple hundred deaths a day down from a couple thousand deaths a day. And that is, in fact, what this study is suggesting, right? The IMHE study. If you actually look at the numbers, they are suggesting that the deaths by day will drop from approximately 2,600 as of April 17th, which they expect to be the high death day, April 16th, April 17th, down to about 1,600 by May 1st, and then down to about 240 by June 1st. And now that's assuming everybody stays home. In all likelihood, the curve is a little bit less flat than that. Probably the curve doesn't decline quite as quickly, but let's say that we get to the point where it's 400 or 500 deaths a day, back down from 2,500 deaths a day by mid-May. Let's say the model is right. Okay, what happens when we start sending people back to work? And how do we do that? There's been talk about we have serology tests that are put in place, widespread tests for antibodies. We don't even know that the antibodies actually immunize you for that long. We just don't know that much about this virus. So there may come a point where, in the interest of having a functioning economy, we say to everybody above the age of 65, you're going to need to stay home for a couple of more months. And everybody who's under the age of 65, you can go out and work, but you should wear a mask and you should social distance. And we stratify the society that way. That may be the quick and dirty way to do this, considering that the alternative is supposedly widespread testing and serology tests that don't yet exist. Especially because, again, like nobody knows what these numbers are. Everybody is sort of shooting in the dark here. So this has created a lot of blowback against Anthony Fauci. There are some people on the right who are very angry at Anthony Fauci or Deborah Birx for putting out these numbers, these 100 to 240,000 dead numbers, without a lot of data that show where this is coming from or over even what period of time that is. Here's the reality. Fauci and Birx are in the dark just like the rest of us. Right? They know the numbers better than we do for the next 3 months, but they don't know further on beyond that. That's not their fault. That's just called the lack of data. But one thing is for certain. Data, real-time data, is going to come in, and it's going to come in over the next 2 weeks. We know exactly what it's going to look like on the economic end. The only question is what it's going to look like on the health end. And so as those numbers come in, we'll see how closely the models mirror and how the models change. More data means better models. So we can all hope that the data comes in and the models have to be revised downward, as they were in Britain, right? Then the models were revised downward from 500,000 dead to 20,000 dead based on activity by people declining fairly markedly. And we're going to get to more of this in just 1 second. First, let's talk about the fact you're online endlessly these days. That means that you need a VPN. Lots of people looking for that credit card number. Lots of people want to monitor your web traffic and use it and monetize it. Well, you shouldn't make your data somebody else's data. This is why ExpressVPN exists. They're not going to log your data, unlike those really cheap or free VPNs that make money by selling your data to ad companies. ExpressVPN has developed the technology. It's called Trusted Server. It makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your information. I've tried a lot of VPNs in the past. A lot of them slow your connection down, make your device sluggish. I've been using ExpressVPN. My internet speeds remain incredibly fast, which is important since I am now working from home. The last thing that really sets ExpressVPN apart is that ExpressVPN, it really is convenient. You install it on your computer with one click. You are good to go. A lot of other places, not just I, am saying, I'm not the only one saying that ExpressVPN is great. TechRadar says it, The Verge, CNET, a lot of other tech experts. Protect yourself today with the VPN I use and trust. Use my link, expressvpn.com/Ben. Get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Ben. Again, visit expressvpn.com/Ben to learn more. expressvpn.com/Ben. So, as I say, the Washington Post is questioning this. The Washington Post is saying that the models just are not all that solid because it's impossible to know the models. Washington Post says, knowing the assumptions built into the White House officials' projected number could tell us a lot, exactly how contagious and deadly they believe the virus to be. It would reflect their beliefs on how the federal government and states will behave in upcoming months and whether they do enough to make a difference. The IMHE model assumes every state will quickly impose stay-at-home orders, but a lot of states haven't even done that. President Trump has extended the White House restrictions only until April 30th. Another key question is what time period the study covers. We have no idea. There's also an article from Nature talking about the simulations that are being run basically in the United States and abroad. They talk about the Imperial College model. That's the one that suggested that worst case scenario, the United States might lose 2.2 million people to coronavirus. Here's what Nature says. Media reports have suggested that an update to the Imperial team's model in early March was a critical factor in jolting the UK government into changing its policy on the pandemic. The researchers initially estimated that 15% of hospital cases would need to be treated in ICU. They updated that figure to 30%. That model showed the UK health service, with just over 4,000 ICU beds, would be overwhelmed. Government officials had previously talked up a theory of allowing the disease to spread while protecting the oldest in society because large numbers of infected people would recover and provide herd immunity for the rest. But then they changed their course on seeing the new figures. The author of that study, Neil Ferguson, said the significance of the model update might have been exaggerated. Even before that, he says models already indicated that COVID-19, if left entirely unmitigated, could kill in the order of 500,000 UK citizens over the next year, and ICUs would be stretched beyond capacity. Advisory teams had discussed suppressing the pandemic by social distancing, but officials were worried this would lead to a bigger second outbreak later in the year. Widespread testing of the kind seen in South Korea was not considered. That was because Britain could not actually do it. The key update came the week before Ferguson briefed officials at Downing Street. Clinicians who had been talking to horrified colleagues in Italy said pressurized oxygen wasn't working well and that all 30% of the severe hospitalized cases would need invasive ventilation in an ICU. Ferguson said that the updated models of mortality projections didn't change hugely, but the understanding of how the health services would be overwhelmed did change fairly radically. But as researchers discover more about the virus, they're updating a lot of key variables. In the March 26th report, the Imperial team did revise its estimate of infectiousness upwards to between 2.4 and 3.3, and then they moved it to 3 to 4.7. Some crucial information remains hidden from the modelers. This is according to Nature magazine. A reliable test to see who has been infected without showing symptoms. Nobody knows. Also, people don't know how people will react to forced alterations to their behaviors and whether such changes will reduce infectious contacts by as much as scientists expect. So there's just an enormous amount of uncertainty. In the United States, according to that Imperial College model, implementing measures to contain the virus could stop people with COVID-19 from overwhelming the hospital beds, but a second wave might be expected later in the year. And that second wave could be nearly as large as the primary wave. So all of that uncertainty is not leading to a lot of sanguinity about the economy. Are we killing the economy for no reason or for a very good reason? And what is the perspective if we do? Well, we're going to bring you coming up a useless political battle between President Trump and Chuck Schumer. This one was started by Schumer, who then whined when President Trump responded to him. Because that's the way this thing goes. Politics doesn't stop just because everybody is worried about dying in a pandemic. So Chuck Schumer versus President Trump coming up. I will say Trump's response to Schumer, it's actually pretty funny. I mean, it's pretty funny. And this is definitely dictated by President Trump. This is not written by any ghostwriter. This is pure, uncut Trump. This is the full Trump. You're listening to the Ben Shapiro Show. We'll be right back.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt?
I owe the IRS $37,000.
Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs that may protect you from IRS collection agencies. They have the power to garnish your wages, put liens on your property, and levy your bank account. Civic Tax Relief can help protect you from the IRS.
Civic Tax Relief basically represented me against the IRS, and by the time everything was completed, I didn't owe the IRS anything.
Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs available for free.
I would recommend anyone who has a tax problem to contact Civic Tax Relief.
Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. Don't wait. Call now. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you waiting for? Relieve your tax.